Welcome to the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast, taking you around the country, shedding light on the work of the Scottish FA from grassroots to coach development, and taking a look at the future of our game. In this episode, your host Lewis Irons sits round the table with Performance Director Malky Mackay, Head of Coaching and Development Greg Patterson, and Director of Coaching at United Soccer Coaches Ian Barker.
Delighted to welcome you all along for another roundtable discussion. Greg, Malky, welcome back, of course, you're familiar to this. And of course, Ian, welcome along for the first time, and I guess that's the best place to start with this podcast, if you would like to give us a little bit about your role at United Soccer Coaches.
Sure, so I've been living in the States for a long time, coaching college football, elite youth football, and a number of years ago, took a position of the Director of Coaching Education for United Soccer Coaches. It used to be called the National Soccer Coaches Association of America, but we changed that a couple of years ago. And so I perform a very similar role to that of Greg, which is our coaching education programs. We have other membership services and awards and rankings and things like that, and a player development kind of component, but mine is almost exclusively in that coach education space.
Greg, Malky, I'm sure you'll share my delight in welcoming Ian along today. And Greg, a bit of background before we look into the future of what this sort of relationship can build. Let's look back how your paths first crossed.
Funnily enough, our paths only first crossed, myself and Ian, this January, physically. I think we had an email relationship for probably 6 or 7 years previous to that. I was with the Football Association of Ireland in a similar role, and such is the desire of American coaches to try and do UEFA license courses. And then I would always check in with Ian. You know, if somebody was applying for a UEFA license course, I would always ask Ian's opinion on that coach and their suitability to go on courses. So that relationship, I suppose, kind of developed through email and then meeting face-to-face in January.
And Malky, in the first episode of the podcast, you described everything, the development of football over in the States, as a juggernaut. It's a great way to describe it, because the trajectory it's on right now really is exciting, and I guess having someone like Ian alongside us really is a great bridge to have.
Very much so. I mean, I couldn't grasp the enormity of the size of popularity that coach education is actually taken in America, and the route it's taken, and the amount of people that are desperate to be educated, desperate in a quest of knowledge, and to then see the structure of the USC and how Ian led the training camp down in Florida before we then went on to Chicago to the juggernaut that was the convention. It was fabulous to watch. I was talking to Greg the first morning as we walked through breakfast, and there must have been 100 meetings going on at breakfast in a huge hotel. And invariably, there are a lot of different business meetings. You know, in that day, every one of them was about football and people discussing a variety of things through football. And it was actually really, really good to actually go and experience it firsthand. And then to be invited, as I said, by Ian to come down to Florida to be involved in one of the coaching assessments was a lovely honour. And it was nice to actually be brought into the group and actually sit and watch. And, you know, at one point Ian allowed us to come in and sit, and there was groups of three that were actually doing feedback sessions to him. Very intimate, very small groups, and myself, Greg and Andy were allowed to sit in the corner and watch these feedback sessions. So absolute honour for that as well. And, you know, you end up talking about shared pathways, and McGregor on for days and days, but Ian's head was fried by that point because he had 15,000 people to deal with at the convention, so we left him alone at that point.
That's the thing, when we sit down for a roundtable discussion like this, we inevitably only will scratch the surface of what is such a bigger picture. Ian, from your side of things, looking at what we're doing and what the guys are doing here in Scotland, there's a lot that you can take as well, isn't there, the two-way sort of relationship?
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to, over my time in America, to have appreciated how foreign FAs and clubs have really come to respect the American soccer coach and the American soccer community. And whilst the SFA are not alone in demonstrating that respect, they're probably one of the very first associations which came to America to learn and to look for ways to exchange. So the vast number of people in America who trace Scottish heritage, you know, that could be potentially valuable to the broader work of the SFA. The exchange of ideas in the coaching education space some of our commercial pieces, and indeed some of our communication programs and products like podcasts and things like that. So I really feel now much more equipped after a number of years to start to bridge a two-way exchange, whereas previously it was important for us to associate with the foreign organizations, the foreign clubs, because they gave us such credibility. Now I really feel like we have some things to bring to the table too that could be potentially valuable to Greg and exchanges like this.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned that, and of course, talking about these two-way trips, there is a lot more to it, isn't there? And when we get into the nuts and bolts of it all, Greg, it must be exciting for guys in your sorts of positions to be having this sort of bridge.
It's very exciting, yeah. As Ian said there, you know, to touch on kind of ways in which we can exchange and learn from one another is crucial, and we're always fortunate that UEFA afford us that opportunity. But to stretch our wings that little bit further over to America through Ian and through the United Soccer Coaches, then better still, that we can go and we can do that, and then we can try and, I suppose, engage further with not only the Scottish coaches over there, but those coaches that have maybe got that thirst and desire to do likewise and to come here to maybe do courses and complement, you know, the good work that they've done through Ian's courses.
Yeah, because there is a lot to be learned, isn't there, Malky, from both sides, and the football going in the right direction, pushing in the right direction, and this is something that can ultimately lead to that for both.
Huge, and I think at the moment, certainly from what I've seen in America, but certainly over in Britain at the moment, there is a young generation of coach coming through with this desperation to learn and to find best practice from older coaches and more experienced coaches. And, you know, overseeing Ian, watching him in Florida and watching him up in Chicago, you know, I hope he takes this the right way. He looks like a young Dick Bate, and Dick Bate over for me was the doyen of British coaching, one of the best coach educators there ever was, and he passed away recently. We did a lot of work for the Scottish FA, worked for myself down at Cardiff, worked for the English FA, worked over at Ian's convention and all over the world. And when you see good coaches and coaches who are educators and who can command 300-400 people sitting in a room that want to learn from them, these are the people you actually want to actually connect with and do these exchange of ideas and have them over talking to your coaches, you know, get coaches to go over to America. What can we bring over there? What you've got at the heart of it is a love of football. This very rarely starts with money. This starts with football at the middle of it. And when you've got that to start with, then anything can spin off it.
Yeah, and talking about spinning off it, I guess there isn't a better example in world football at the minute than something spinning off and growing quickly and rapidly like is happening in the States, Ian. And I guess you've seen it better than us. Malky described it as a juggernaut, but you, seen at the heart of it, must see the future and the trajectory it's on.
Yeah, the you know, you'd point to MLS, which has been around since 1996. So it's not a very mature league in terms of years, but it's clearly an established, built-in league now with foreign ownership and increasingly better level international foreign players coming to play in the league. And that doesn't, you know, if your listeners are familiar with the old NASL, which was a little bit more respectfully of a circus way back in the day. So this is a proper professional league, which now allows young Americans to get their experiences if they're not playing in Europe. The ownership bases are solid, and it now gives role models and stories for our kids, because our kids have always had high school soccer, college soccer to aspire to, and our youth game, which is heavily funded by parental contributions, it's a big economy, that's always been there, it's always been massive. But now being at a, so when the guys come over, if we took them to the Kansas City facility where I live, it's state of the art, it's on a par with just about any professional setup in the world. And that's where we're going with the game. So, you know, we might be a few years away in America from winning a World Cup, but a quarterfinal. There's certainly an expectation of making every World Cup. So the last one was a disaster for us. But not only making everyone, but getting out of the group stage and then seeing how far you can progress. And the group of young Americans they have now that are doing well at the 17s and 20s at the World Cup level, they should be positioned in 2026 to not only host a really good World Cup, but along with Mexico and Canada, I think really make a good showing. I think Mexico or the US, and then you occasionally get a Costa Rica in there or a Canada. But CONCACAF, it's not the easiest confederation, but I think it's certainly when we host, I think it'll be an interesting time. So I'm kind of looking forward to 6 years down the road.
Yeah, Ian, you make some interesting points in the overarching side of it all and the whole encompassing of what we're aiming for, Malky. I want to get to with you shortly, but before that, when we focus on the coaching side of all this and what how it can be the foundation to get to this sort of goal, it's huge for you guys to have this and to move forward in this right direction.
It's huge for, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's a bit like any participation, maybe first and foremost, you try and build that base as wide as you possibly can and try and make courses accessible as you possibly can to increase that footfall. And that might sound like it's a money making exercise, but it's not really, because you know a lot of that early education might just be, as we've spoke about in previous podcasts with like some Michael Beale the last time as well, you know, it's just to guide young players. And then people will, you know, you've talked about trajectory. People will go on their own pathway and see how far they can take that. And if people then want to continue up a UEFA pathway, for example, and pursue UEFA B licences and A licence courses, then they'll work further in the game. So the bigger we can have that base, the more likely we are to have coaches then that will continue up that pathway and hopefully become coaches where they start taking the game seriously, they start taking coaching seriously, and there are becoming obviously more and more opportunities as the game grows throughout all the other good work that's done throughout the association. There are more opportunities to become, you know, an employed coach in different ways, shapes and forms throughout the country, whether that be now in the girls game, in the boys game, grassroots, you know, and then into kind of Club Academy Scotland work if they improve as coaches. So all these different opportunities are opening up to them. We recently, through a kind of mutual friend of Ian and ours as well, Ian Donnelly, we devised and delivered a performance analysis course. You know, and 16 people, we thought we'll cap it at 16, and will we even get 16? We hardly even advertised the course, and 16 people had signed up and booked on that course. So it's different ways, the reason I tell that story, it's different ways in which people can get maybe a living in the game or take things a bit more serious in the game and take things a bit more serious, so that, you know, that not only fuels their own appetite for working further in the game, but, you know, also equips others. You know, it'll help coaches, it'll help other coaches, it'll help the players themselves to get that extra feedback. And that just, as you say, that's trajectory, it's the juggernaut that Malky talks about, and it all just grows and links together.
And ultimately then leads to the overarching whole image and the whole goal, Malky, doesn't it? And your thoughts on that you can add to Greg's point?
Completely. As I said before, there was a recent document, a German, one of the technical directors in Germany, put out concerning what they look for in a coach. And they talked about a coach being able to have a bag of balls, a group of players, and have 50 people watching and be coaching at ease. Secondly, be a scholar of the game. Go and study and understand the game as deeply as you can and go and find best practice. But thirdly, be a people catcher. They called it a people catcher, and be someone who makes players want to play for you, makes staff want to work for you. And that's certainly where we're driving towards, having a coach who is a well-rounded with those three criteria. I think the further we go, the more confident young coaches are getting in terms of being able to go and coach in other countries. So there are a finite amount of jobs in this country. Greg's spoken about putting on performance analysis courses where coaches can actually go and learn that side of the game. There's also, you know, the possibility of talent ID at some point courses. So we go and we get coaches to go and invest in their time in that. So that there's other avenues for coaches to go and become, but also to then go and step out into the big brave world and actually step outside of our little island and actually go and coach like Ian does and like a lot of foreign coaches do when they come here. You know, pick up their bag and come here and coach for a year and pick up their bag and go and coach in another country and have the confidence to do that. A lot of our young coaches, they get maybe one job, they get knocked because they get the sack. Does it make him a bad coach? Not really. Does it make him a coach that needs to learn and be given another opportunity and can become a good coach? Absolutely. So, you know, the world now, but for that, you need to be educated, because you rock up somewhere and you don't have the fundamentals, you quickly get found out. Whereas you make sure that you've got experience, you go and learn from the best, you start off, you know, your local clubs, and you can end up on the other side of the world coaching. And That's what I would like our young coaches to think about. You know, there's only going to be so many that will actually hit the heights in this country, but there's an awful lot of big world out there. There's a lot of football going on.
More, it's, you're not just creating a coach, are you? Like what Malky alludes to there, it's the right person, the right mould of person to thrive in an environment like that.
Yeah, the coaching education, even if you're a fantastic instructor, you can only get so far in the integrity and the quality and the conscientious nature of the individual. But you hope you send them out there with some tools, and if they are a people catcher and they can bring this to life, you know, people ask occasionally, why are you still in it? And I work with a lot of grassroots coaches and things like that, hopefully to help America win, you know, do well in a World Cup. But you can improve communities. So a halfway decent coach with some interested kids, I think you can make for a better environment. I also think, though, a poor coach, not necessarily with great intention, but just not well prepared or well trained, can actually make the experience negative and actually contribute to a lesser community and a lesser experience. So part of the job of people like myself and Greg is to, as sort of philosophical as it sounds, is actually to support community development and community growth, be it through sport or be it through church or arts and entertainments. But we just happen to work in soccer. And that's why when you sit with these people that pretty much choose to come to the courses. So if we have 30 people tonight, which is fantastic, there's 300 or 400 other people that could have been there that for whatever reason chose not to be. Frankly, right now, I'm not too worried about the 300 or 400 because my entire commitment is to the 30 that demonstrated enough interest and enthusiasm for it, because we can help them go out and have a more enjoyable time and make it more enjoyable for kids, which is if you can do that, you've done a pretty good job.
It really shows the scale of the job that you're doing as well, that you're dealing with communities to start with, but then you've got Scottish coaches out in America learning over there, you've got foreign coaches coming over learning from our courses and licenses over here, and it's quite hard to put to the average person maybe or to the listening in the scale of what you guys are actually dealing with, and it does really sum it up when you hear from the small branching out like that.
It does. It's you know, if I go back to the convention, I remember one morning at breakfast with Malky just saying, I think I need to go for a lie down, because the scale of Ian's convention is such that, as Malky said, you would walk through any area with meeting goes on, or you would bump into people and you might get recognised, and they would say, can I pick your brains on this? Can I come and do a course about this? And you're just kind of going, gee, what is it? It was really all-encompassing, and Ian's right, whether that's grassroots level or whether it's UFA licence level, UFAB licence level, all those different levels, all those different kinds of people wanting to, you know, having that thirst for education to try and help themselves, to help that community team or to maybe even to help that professional team, that's the ultimate goal. And as Ian said, it does sound a bit philosophical to say, but the end goal is putting that man on the moon or qualifying for that World Cup finals. So it was just the scale of that convention again was, as I said earlier, just that morning was, Malky, I don't know if I can go into this arena almost this morning. I don't know if I'm ready for battle with these 15,000 coaches and these, you know, I'm not saying all 15,000 wanted, not by any stretch of imagination, but, you know, 20, 30, 40, and that's not even exaggerating. I don't think, like, Greg, can we see about this? Or Malky might say, I bumped into such and such, you need to go and see him now. So, incredible appetite and from people just looking for further learning.
I can imagine it was an incredible experience, Malky. I'm sure you were thriving in it over there, were you?
Yeah, so at that point, Greg needed to go for more pancakes at breakfast. once he was finished with his, he was able to go into the arena. As I said, I think it's something that we can keep learning from as far as our association, the amount of good people we met, the whole organisation. Ian actually took some time out and sat and explained United Soccer coaches part in the forming of coaches in America, and where it sat with the US Federation, and it's pretty mind blowing. And you know, we sat and discussed boys clubs in America where 5,000 kids are actually at them, and this is the scale where we talk about the scale. We didn't, you know, it's like blowing us away where you'd be talking to a guy who's got the biggest boys club in one of the states, who have got, you know, an incredible pool of people, it was arranged for us to go and talk in front of a couple of hundred expat Scots coaches and guys that were out in America who had flown in from various parts, for Greg and Andy and myself to give a kind of state of the nation speech about what is going on in Scotland at the moment. And then afterwards we all met them in a bar, and they were able to swap their stories and tell us what they were doing. And you know, I bumped into a guy that polished my boots at Celtic, Jamie Smith, who's now a very well respected coach at a huge boys club in America, and you know, having a life there with his family and earning a wage and a career, and loving being there as a director of coaching. So there is a big wide world out there, but the vastness of, you know, you discuss and you talk to these boys clubs, and they're set up so well, structured so well, the facilities, the clubs are constantly striving for their coaches to be better qualified, but the facilities and the will of the people to want to go and turn up and bring their families and bring the kids, and it's part of the community. Certainly something I think we can look at and think, can we do better as far as that's concerned?
Yeah, I think one of the points I want to make as well is that we've spoke about a lot about where this path might go, what it might, but there are success stories out there already from what we see, and it's not an overnight thing. You can't click your fingers and all the results are there, but you touch about Jamie Smith there are some real success stories from what's going on in the States just now as well.
Yeah, it's so Greg makes a really good point, because a lot of our coaches have gone through our awards or a certain number of our awards and would like to come and experience UEFA. There's many expats who have gone almost exclusive UEFA, which is what got them because of their coaching qualifications, that now come to our courses and US soccer courses, and they contribute a lot. But again, to my earlier point, they don't come in and sort of feel like they're obliged to be there just simply to get an American award. They're actually coming to learn, and they're quite impressed and amazed. And certainly a number of years ago, one of the things that was really strong about our education was the sports sciences, more of what we might call the soft skills. Very good in psychology and fitness, and because we have the facilities. Now, certainly the European federations have all of that content. So where we continue to lack a little bit is the history of soccer, the immersed culture, because even though we have 24 teams in MLS and a massive second division, we don't get football on television quite as much. It's not on the back page of the newspaper quite as much. And a lot of the parents haven't played the sport, and we still have American football and basketball and baseball. But what we've done is we've chosen not to bemoan and be disappointed by our reality, but accept and embrace our reality. And then, of course, as we're all doing now, to the point of the global sharing, we're all taking inputs from other people, because if Greg and Malky come to our convention and see something and try to replicate it, it's impossible. I mean, we have six time zones. So when it's 6 a.m. in New York, it's midnight in Hawaii. So, you know, what does that mean? When Chris van der Hagen talks to you and they do their C license once a week, and they all drive in and they drive home that night, we have to fly people in and they have to stay in a hotel for 5 days. So these are the different economies and diseconomies of scale you have. But what's so refreshing is not feeling you're alone. So when I talk to Greg by email or by phone, it's really refreshing for me, because he might be having a bad day, he might be dealing with some facilities or an instructor, and I have that a lot too, and I have wonderful success stories, and it's really nice to know there are fellow professionals around the world that are sort of, we're brothers in arms in this particular aspect of the development of the game. Now, of course, we have, you know, other people have got to worry about building facilities and managing at different levels and commercial partnerships. But in that wonderful world of working with coaches, the sharing part is huge.
And it's fascinating how much we share, but then how different we are as well. You know, talk about time zones, nothing we have to ever consider, things like that. The scale, the population over here. And then you talk about culture as well. We're on the opposite end of that, where we have a culture that's ingrained in that. And I guess that can still have its challenges, you know, the differences that we have.
Yeah, I mean, even I'll go back to my time in Ireland as well. Even when I came back from Ireland, and you know, born and bred in Scotland, even when I came back from Ireland, it's almost like I forgot how people used to say, how are you getting on back in Scotland? I forgot about the industry of the game here, even in comparison to Ireland, you know, because maybe the domestic league in Ireland isn't as strong as it is here. And, you know, we've 42 professional clubs, and I was just blown away. And I was thinking, why am I so blown away by this? You know, I'm Scottish, I'm from here, I've worked here before. But you're right that the industry we have here is incredible. You know, Ian talks about, you know, we'll get 30, 40 coaches along to Ian's CPD event tonight. You know, the challenges that in itself brings, okay, let's ask Ian to do some practical work. Where the hell can we get a venue on a Thursday night? Well, people are training, okay, we can get some area over in Torrey Glen that Ian's able to do that, but we've got other teams training round about them, and how can we cope with that and deal with that? So, but it's all that kind of, and you'll hear UEFA talk about this, and the likes of Chris van der Hagen talking about that reality-based. So it is reality-based in that that industry is 100 miles an hour. It never, my friends that don't work in football, my school friends that I grew up with kind of slag me because I'm working every Saturday, every Sunday, every midweek that God sends, but it just doesn't, you know, football doesn't sleep necessarily, and it is that all-encompassing industry. And when I wake up in the morning, I have got 4 or 5 emails from, if one of them aren't from Ian, you know, from American coaches, from Australian coaches, from, you know, coaches in other parts of the world, maybe looking for education.
Yeah. And you summed it up earlier, Malky, the reason that we're all here, particularly just now, but the reason that we have these sorts of things is a love of the game, isn't it?
And I think that both guys have touched on one point in terms of if coaches want to come, they'll come, and that's the ones you should actually care about. We do have challenges in our country because at times there is an expectation that things are put on for free, for nothing. I go over to the American convention and I see people with an absolute thirst for desperation for knowledge and a willingness to pay for it, to fly to the other side of the country, to put themselves up in hotels, to have 4 days with specialists who have been put on for them, to make themselves better. Our challenge is that to put the education out there, to make sure that it's at a high level, and coerce and hope that we get enough coaches to come along to it. I think that's changing. I think we are getting more and more that are wanting to put themselves out to educate themselves and to have to pay for it because it's the way of the world. And I think that we don't get hung up on who doesn't come any longer. And I think we absolutely concentrate on who comes, as Ian said, and make those top coaches. And eventually peer pressure comes along anyway. And if, you know, someone goes to see a specialist and someone doesn't, and their friends and they're in the pub and they're talking about it, eventually the guy that doesn't go eventually thinks, I wish I'd gone to that, I'll go next time. And that can snowball and build an effect in a country, and that's where a culture is developed. But it's about us now concentrating on who wants to actually learn, and really fueling them, as opposed to going out to try and find who doesn't come. So and that's, I suppose, slightly controversial, but it is what it is. It's the way that we're certainly going to start applying things in here, because there is a lot of good coach educators and a lot of good facilitators out there that we have got access to and we have got relationships with because you work at it and you go and see them, they come and see you. And, you know, for the coaches that are going to be coming into the courses, they're going to see a hell of a broad range of very good people.
Yeah, because ultimately that'll breed the best results. You want it with these people that are passionate, that are willing to go to those lengths to learn.
I'm with Malky completely on as much as I would rather focus on those who have have demonstrated an enthusiasm, and whether that requires a cost. It certainly requires a cost of their time at a minimum. Sometimes it does require a cost to rent a facility or lay on a coffee and a biscuit. But let's worry about them first. And if the job is done well, they will be the salespeople to get to the next level of coaches that were maybe sitting on the fence or didn't think it was for them, as opposed to almost ignoring your core constituents, the enthusiastic, the committed, the effective. Sometimes we're so busy worried about, again, what isn't there. And it's very similar to coaching. If you're a grassroots coach and you show up to the training and you're looking forward to having 12 kids and 10 show up and you throw a strop, as it were, the 10, you're doing a massive disservice to those 10. So let's coach those 10. Let's give them the best experience they can. Hopefully they bring their mates the next time, and then maybe I'll go and make a couple of phone calls and find out where the other two were, and it was a perfectly good reason because their parents couldn't get them there. But we too often coach to the middle or worry about the things we can't control. And we talk about this in the coaching schools at the most fundamental levels. Control what you can control. So Greg can control the curriculum, the facilities, the offerings. He's got the support of senior leadership at the SFA. He can control that. And then the customers, the coaches will come. And that's what we're seeing tonight, because I don't think this is a required event by any means. No. And 30 good souls are giving time and money to come and get another learning opportunity. And it's great.
Yeah, I think that's important. I think it's so important that, and I don't hide the fact, and it is as kind of outlandish as it may perhaps seem, you know, you're keen to offer something that's world-class and drive us forward to world-class offering and world-class provision in coach education. And I know Malky does that on the performance side of the game as well, but genuinely keen to try and do that where we can. And as the guys have both said there, once the people turn up, that breeds that culture again. If it's good, and we believe in what we're doing, which we do. So having the likes of Ian across tonight, and I see some comments on social media over the last couple of days saying it's a unique opportunity, it's a great opportunity to see somebody who's working at the level again. You know, we're bringing over, well, we're not bringing him over. He thankfully agreed to his time as he's over here on his holidays. But, you know, he's thankfully agreed to that time. So we've got that time from him. He's, you know, he's a coaching director of, you know, a major organisation over there in the States. So we're able to put him in front of people. Now, whether it's, you know, whether it's through chance or through fluke or whatever, he's there, he's in front of those coaches tonight, and he'll be able to talk and bring a lot of experience that somebody will get something from. You know, so that's moving towards, in my eyes, world-class provision, because we are broadening our horizons out to the, you know, out to the world. And as I said before, we've always done it through UEFA circles. So if we can, you know, increase that, then all the better. And we try and push those boundaries all the time, as Malky said earlier, to try and breed that culture even more so, and create best practice.
So Greg, can you give us a bit more information about the event tonight itself?
Yeah, the event tonight is part of our CPD programme. When I say CPD, CPD is Continuous Professional Development. So we have I lose count of how many UEFA qualified coaches we have who must attain then 15 hours of CPD every 3 years, sorry, to maintain their licence qualification. Through that as well, Malky, through the kind of Club Academy Scotland programme, you know, they've got an ask of all those full-time coaches within Club Academy Scotland as well to attain even more hours than that. And as well as that, you know, Ian's talked about it before, you know, those interested souls, as he alludes to, you know, you've got those interested that maybe don't have a UEFA licence or are maybe working towards a UEFA licence who may just be interested in coming along. So our CPD programme tries to encompass all those kind of different types of people. I've been keen in the past maybe year or so to try and segment that a little bit more. So perhaps if you want to be a specialist in, as we said earlier, performance analysis, or maybe physical preparation, or maybe even youth development work, or whatever. But I think having worked with someone like Ian and having the opportunity for Ian to be part of that CPD programme, it really is an open door tonight for, you know, whether you're working in the grassroots game, such as Ian's skills and abilities to transcend all those different coaches. So that's what we're up to tonight.
And I guess you must be relishing going into that sort of environment with guys hungry to learn and listen to what you've got to offer. You
know? Well, it's certainly a tremendous honour to be invited, and I'm very grateful for that. The other part of it, though, which I think is true and fair, is if you're not a little bit anxious about hitting the right content and doing a good job, then you're not you've lost something. So there's a certain anxiety about the audience and if we give them good value. I'm really interested to get going with it, because I know once we get going, it's a lot better than preparing and thinking about it. So we're going to, at Ian Donnelly's advice, the gentleman that did the last CPD or a coaching education program, we'll just do about 10-15 minutes, quick idea about what the current state of the US game is, just to give a context. And then with Greg's blessing, we're going to talk a little bit about leadership. Because we do a lot of this type of content in our high-level awards. So for some of the guys, UEFA B, UEFA A, this is the type of content that they might see if they ever got to the pro license, that type of content. And then the field session, which is really interesting. So I talked to Greg about the size of the field, about the number of players, the type of players. But like real coaching, those metrics have changed since we planned it. So we went from certain size of field to a different size. So that means that you think like a real coach, you know, you've got to be flexible. So my job tonight with the changed facilities is to try to give the coaches some value, but also appreciate that some of them are very much the grassroots coaches and others are perhaps working in professional academies. It, unlikely you go to a session of 60 minutes, 75 minutes and love all of it. What you're probably going to do is say, I like that bit, I'll keep that. That's solid, doesn't work for me. I'm not sure I'd ever do that bit. And if I can get somewhere in there where those coaches can come away with just one or two bits, and hopefully some of the coaches have come away with a lot more, then I feel like I've given Greg good value and we've done a good job. And again, you know, if you're sincere in your intention and you can be that people catcher and get that across the audience, even if you don't have a good night of performance, they're grateful for the time and effort and they appreciate that. So that's what we'll try to do.
I think as well, just as Ian said there, you know, if somebody can take bits, I'm thinking just as Ian's chatting there, I think the likes of maybe a James Grady who's attending tonight, who has worked with our international squads, who does work in our performance schools as well. You know, that facility having changed and things. So James might be on one hand used to working with an international squad at under 16 level, but then he's suddenly working in a performance school. So has a different pitch, a different ability of child to work with or youth player to work with. So, you know, there will be something, I've no doubt there will be something that Ian will give us his kind of gold tonight. There'll be something to, as I say, transcend all those different coaches. And there are so many coaches that pick work up in different pockets of the game as well. So although they are maybe UFA licence holders to substantiate that full-time work that they do, they may also work in the grassroots game a couple of hours in a week to keep their hand in or just to top up that amount of hours that they do within a club. So they're without doubt, you know, give them something, you know, for all that different range
and
of coaches.
Your listeners who've not been in the coaching education realm, there are some really important distinctions that we have to manage. So there's content, there's method. You also, sometimes you're doing a model session. So this is how I would coach my kids, just watch me coach my kids. Other times you're coaching the kids on a clinic basis and the clinic is for the audience. And sometimes you have to be really explicit. Okay, I wouldn't stop it this many times if this was me and the lads or the lasses on Lesser Hampden and we had half a field for 75 minutes. I'm stopping it for the benefit of you, the 30 in the stands. Okay, you know, there are very few soccer training activities that they haven't seen. So if the game is to put on 101 different drills, you're a mug. The idea is this is the way so the same session that Malky does and Greg does and I do, but this is how I twist it and my nuance and what I get out of it. And the more sophisticated observer or the more willing observer will see that. So literally give us the same session. We'll all do it for 30 minutes. And it'll all be quite good, but they'll all be quite different. And then you can say, well, you know what? I fit more Malky style. I want to be more in there as opposed to a little bit more outside. Or I want to be, you know, much more stop-start as opposed to coaching the flow. And these are all of the bag of tricks that an effective coach has. And hopefully the effective coach educator can express that. Because what you don't want to do too often is have those 30 coaches scratching their head saying, I have no idea what he's doing here. You've got to keep going back to them and being clear on your explanations.
Because that's one of the major challenges, well, or tasks, if you like, is there is that culture, there is that passion, interest there. It's then over to this side to keep that fire alight, keep it and make it grow, ultimately.
Certainly, we've had, myself and Greg and Andy, have had many a conversation as far as this is concerned, certainly in our 10-hour flight across to America to see Ian, about getting back, stripping it back and getting back to being the University of Football, the Scottish FA, going back to being the coach educator leaders in Europe, where Andy Roxburgh had us 30 years ago, and where, rightly so, lots of different countries catch up. But we've got to make sure that we are out there now looking to see what's in front of the curve and going and start educating again as far and wide as we can. So that's something that is a challenge for us, but it's something that we've got people in the building that are excited about doing that. And, you know, when you have that, then you've got a chance.
I can see and I think it's tangible to feel the benefits that trip had for the guys. You're obviously over here on your holidays, but I'm sure you'll take plenty of benefits back with you as well, Ian, from being over here and being around this sort of environment again.
Yeah, well, just having lunch with the fellas is great. But this people catching idea, I think Greg actually talked about it there a little bit too. I'm hoping that if the 30 people tonight are engaged and willing to ask a question or challenge or pick a little bit, and I can find out a little bit about where they're coaching and what they're doing, because I know we have some of the senior youth national team coaches coming, which is very nice. But I'm hoping we got some grassroots coaches, who many of whom probably are volunteers. So these are young men or women that work a full-time job, and then in the evenings they're given up 2 or 3 hours to coach their community clubs, and maybe they get a tracksuit at the end of the season and they get to enjoy the pizza party. Though, you know, I would really like to understand those stories and what it means to give that time and commitment, because in America we have a lot of grassroots coaches that are unpaid, but we also have a lot of grassroots coaches who can make a living at it, which is why there are so many of Greg's colleagues that contact me and say, "You got a job for me?" The answer, which is, "Have you got a visa?" And then the conversation tends to end. But of course, as a former senior player, but people that enjoyed playing as amateurs, decent amateurs, college players, whatever, you have to have the love of the game, because what will happen is there's no way a coach, educator, and or ultimately the candidate can fake it for long enough when you realize they're not in there because they love football first. Now, if you choose to make a fortune at it and somebody will pay you, God bless you. We're happy for that. And the majority won't make a living at it and won't get paid fabulously. But you've got to like being in the environment, because you don't want to be out there at 9:30 at night under half a floodlight when the rain's coming in horizontally, because you can't fake it then. You've really got to like players and you've really got to like coaching football.
Yeah, I knew that we'd get to a point where it just felt like we were scratching the surface. There's so much more to be spoken about in this. So I guess if we try to project into the future, Greg, and down the line, what do you hope to be the next sort of steps that are taken from here?
For us, it's having that visibility for those expat coaches, those Scottish guys that are over there engaging with USC through their convention. It's having that visibility for them, first and foremost, for CPD opportunities, and then engaging with others and, you know, the conversations we've had here, working in conjunction then with Ian to see, you know, what can we perhaps bring to the table for the United Soccer Coaches Convention. You know, and Malky and I again on that flight, as he alluded to, of maybe speaking about, you know, do we bring over next year, does Brian McLaughlin, Scott Gemmell, somebody, you know, Shelley, somebody like that, then go over and present the good work that they're doing in the national games here. Celtic, for example, have a presence at the convention as it is, and I know Rangers have been in touch with me, keen to get over. So there's that side of things as well, that, you know, it's what best practice are we doing in our own country that we can then share with Ian, as well as learning about what's happening over there. But again, I've mentioned two things. There's probably a list of, I keep saying to myself, I need to sit down with in a kind of dark room and a piece of paper and kind of brainstorm all the different ideas that Ian and I have talked about doing, you know, study group visits back and forward, and Ian talking about maybe bringing a group of coaches to do some study visits, maybe go and visit some games, maybe do a Scottish FAC licence together. Different. There's just so many opportunities, as you're saying. We really are just, I think, scratching the surface.
Yeah, and you spoke about trying to look ahead of the curve, Malky. Any kind of final thoughts to round the podcast off on that?
I just think talking to as many like-minded people worldwide as we can, and you glean so many different ideas from each other, that can only help us in terms of what our structure looks like here, how we can take that out and I suppose broaden our horizons elsewhere. And as I said, could we be the University of Football in terms of really enhancing our coaches' educational, you know, life and making them disciples and going out into the world and you know, coaching all over the world. And as I say, with the help of people like Ian, who's actually out in the promised land at the moment, spreading the good news already, then I don't think that can be a bad thing.
Yeah. Ian, yourself, any final thoughts?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I just feel like, you know, one of the benefits for us with this really deep, sincere friendship with the SFA is potentially getting some of the expats back over to complete their education here. And certainly some of our American coaches who've got to good levels in the States, but now need exposure to UEFA programming. Study trips, I think, could be interesting, because I think Scottish coaches, a trip to come and see a couple of MLS teams in action, getting close to the academy programs. So, obviously there's an Atlantic Ocean in between, but we also have developed, we're always developing online resources, as is Greg and his team. And my 9-to-5 job most of the time is dealing right in front of the American audience. But anytime I, as a professional, can get some growth opportunity, but also see the opportunity for the coaches we represent and support, so much the better. And so what's really nice when I come on a trip on it like this is I don't feel as lonely as I do maybe the majority of the time, when you suddenly realize we're all in it together and we're all suffering and benefiting together and celebrating. Because if tonight goes halfway decently, I'll be absolutely buzzing at 9:30. And if it doesn't go so well, I'll kind of reflect and know where it is. But the joy of this is actually, you know, getting out there and being with 30 good souls. So nothing but positive in the interactions I've had with the SFA over the last 6 years. And I really think next year in Baltimore, where we'll be for the convention, the invitation is, and the plan is to have a really significant SFA presence as a large part of our event, because there's a demonstrated enthusiasm from the SFA for that, and there's a demonstrated enthusiasm for our audience for the work that Greg and his guys do.
Yeah, well, I think I speak for us all when I say exciting times ahead, really, on this front, and it's been a pleasure having you all along today, gentlemen, so thank you.
That's all we have time for in this week's edition of the Scottish Football Coaching Podcast. Feel free to send us your feedback, your ideas for coaching topics you want us to cover, and to get in touch, visit @ScottishFA on Twitter or email info@scottishfa.co.uk.